Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. I'm so delighted that you have been able to join me today because we're going to be discussing one of my favorite topics. And what is that? Spooky things, yes. Ghost stories. And my guest today, Jim Harold, he's been on my show before, but this time we've got a new book that he's put out, True Ghost Stories. He calls them Jim Harold's Campfire 2. And he's got 70 wonderful stories in this book that we're going to be talking about. These are stories that people have shared with him on his podcast. Now, do you believe in ghosts? Maybe not. Maybe you think it's a bunch of hoodoo voodoo. I don't care. But having had some experiences of my own, absolutely, I know that there are more things going on in this world, as I think most of us suspect, than we could possibly imagine. Hi, Jim Harold. Welcome to the show.
Hello. It's so good to be with you and your audience today to share some spooky stories.
Jim, you have a podcast. You're in your eighth year with this. And so many people have shared their stories with you. And you have to tell my audience what it was that, first of all, got you interested in even getting into the subject of spooks and things that they do, going bump in the night or whatever. And if we need to know what it was that triggered you to go into saying, I want to really keep a chronicle on some of these things that have happened to other people. I want to share it out there, letting people know that they're not all by themselves in these experiences that they have. What was it that got you interested in this? Did somebody have you at a campfire when you were 5 years old and you just sat there mesmerized, terrified to go to sleep after the ghost stories?
Well, actually, I've got to track my interest to the paranormal back to an old TV show from the 70s, In Search Of. I was a little kid about the age you described. When that was on, and I started watching that and started reading a lot of books about UFOs and the Bermuda Triangle and different mysteries, and I got into my head, and I still have it to this day, that there's more than we can understand out there or that we currently understand. And fast forward to 2005, and I decided to start a podcast on the Paranormal Podcast, where I interview authors and experts about the paranormal. And then in 2009, I said, you know, it's great talking to all these authors and experts and getting all this great information out there, but let's talk to regular folks and see what happens to them. And after doing that a couple of years, somebody said, hey, you ought to write a book, compile some of these stories. So we did the first book back in 2011, and I was on the show then to talk about that one. And just this last September, we came out with Issue 2, as it were, True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2, 70 spooky stories that'll keep you up at night. And I'm glad to share it in the book form because not everybody listens to podcasts, but everybody can read a book. And we love sharing these stories.
Well, Jim, you have so many wonderful stories. But before we get into some of these stories that other people have shared with you, what about yourself? Is there a particular incident that you personally experienced where you go, I can relate?
Yes, I've had a couple of experiences, but they've not been as dramatic as some others. The one I probably would share would be actually because I was in the room when it happened, although I was asleep. I would share the one that happened to my wife, which is actually in the book. And this is long before I podcasted on the paranormal, so it was not through that at all. My mother-in-law, unfortunately, was extremely ill and was at home hospice in 2001. And my wife would go over in the evenings and help out, and she had only been home a couple of days. And this particular evening that this event happened, my mother-in-law shooed my wife away, just basically saying, go home, be with your husband and your young daughter. Mm-hmm. And so almost like she didn't want her to be there. So she didn't leave. She came home. She went to bed. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, she woke up And she saw this tremendous vision over my shoulder. I was asleep, dead to the world, of the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And she said it was unlike anything that's ever been depicted in print or television or movies or anything. Absolutely beautiful, absolutely peaceful and smiling. There about 30 seconds, she actually opened up her eyes and, you know, rubbed her eyes to make sure she wasn't, you know, dreaming. And she said, no, I was absolutely awake. And about after 30 seconds, Mary went away. So my wife falls back asleep. About 30 minutes later, she gets a call from her dad. This is 2:30 in the morning. And he said, she's gone. And my wife's like, who's gone? And he said, your mother. She just passed away about 30 minutes ago. And the thing that, I mean, that would be pretty remarkable in and of itself, but Mary specifically was a real spiritual touchstone for my mother-in-law. She actually promised roses to a statue of Mary when she got married, and then it turned out to be the same time of the Rose Parade, and we live in Ohio, so they didn't have flowers, so she had to take them in a later time, and that even had a little bit of significance, because later that day, my wife was getting the mail out of a mail slot that's in my father-in-law's house, and within the contents of the mail were several rose petals. And there were no roses in the front yard of my father. So it was almost like my mother-in-law was saying goodbye and that I'm okay. And I think maybe those rose petals were kind of a way to kind of hammer home the message, you know, it's me, and I'm okay. And just the juxtaposition, the fact that she got that call, I thought that's very poignant. And I really think it speaks to something. I think that our loved ones do at times try to contact us in different ways. And I think that certainly that story is in a very touching way.
Well, I'd like to share a story that I had because I've worked in the area of mind for most of my life. And a number of years ago, there was a client that called me and wanted me to come out to her home, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about the roses. Now, the rose fragrance is love by so many people. And
yes,
this woman took me in to her bedroom. We had a wonderful, wonderful visit, and she took me into her bedroom, and there was this very large chest of drawers that had what you'd call like a good-sized vanity mirror above it. It was a beautiful piece of furniture. And she was in a state of grief about her mother. Mm. Her mother had died, oh, I guess it was a year or so before, but she and her mother had been extremely close. And she mentioned to me how when she was in that room, when she was in the bedroom, and she would be in front of this chest of drawers, this fragrance of roses that just was so strong. She said it was just incredibly strong. It would always be in that particular part of the house around that chest of drawers. Well, I believe that chest of drawers she inherited from her mother, and with some of the other stuff that she had gotten. And I said to her, and she hadn't even thought of this. I asked her if her mother liked roses, and she said, "Oh, she adored them. She had them, you know, around her as much as possible. She just absolutely loved roses." And I said, "Well, that's your mom trying to communicate with you, letting you know that one, you're loved." And two, she is so pleased just to let you know that she's okay. And so there was an explanation that went on for a while, because in her mode of thinking, that was that possible? Yes, it was. So I just sort of share that in a moment, because I remembered that I hadn't thought of that in years, that experience. But it was so poignant to me, because her mother wanted her to know, first of all, that she was happy, she was safe, and two, that the love that her daughter felt for her was reciprocated. You know, there was just this incredible bond. This woman's face just lit up, and it's as if a big burden was taken off of her shoulders. It's amazing when we can share experiences like that, or give someone an understanding that, one, they're not alone. We're not ever really alone. But two, that sometimes those that we love will try to communicate with us in a way that they feel we can identify with. And just like with your wife and, you know, her mother's passing, roses were significant with my client many years ago. roses were significant to her mother as well. So I just, I find these things absolutely fascinating. Now,
yes.
Go ahead. What were you going to say, Jim?
No, I was going to say, since we're talking a little bit about, and certainly I'm sure we're going to get to some spooky stories, but since we're talking about kind of inspirational, reaffirming loved ones reaching out, I do have an interesting story that involves an answering machine. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, of course. That's
okay.
Spooky. Answering machine.
Well,
people say, what's that?
Yes, that's a blast from the past now.
That's spooky anyway. Okay.
Yeah. Well, this is from Jay from Texas, and he tells the story. He was in his early 20s, and he had been very lucky because he had had all of his grandparents up until his 20s. And there was one particular grandmother he was specifically very close to, and she and his dad had a nickname for him, and the nickname was J-Boy. Only people that ever, ever called him this. Nobody else in life. And anyway, one day he was at work, and he got a call from his dad saying that his grandma had a heart attack, but not to worry. She was going to be okay. They were transferring her to, she'd been to one hospital, they were transferring her to a more sophisticated hospital, and all would be well. And you know, of course, Jay was very concerned. He said, are you sure? Should I leave work and so forth? And he said, no. He's going to be fine. She gave me a thumbs up in the back of the ambulance, so everything's going to be fine. So then he hangs up the phone, and he's there a while, and he's sitting at work. All of a sudden, he breaks down emotionally, and he tells his boss, I've got to go. And the boss says, well, what's wrong? And he explains his grandmother's had this episode, and he feels that something's wrong. He came home, and this is pre-cell phone, and he was very upset. And he'd been home about 30 minutes, and his dad drove up and said, J-Boy, Ma died. And she had passed away as they were pulling into this second hospital. And he said it was very traumatic, and he was absolutely distraught. Well, a few days went by, and as you said, he had one of those old-fashioned answering machines with blinking lights. And if he had one message, the light blinked once, two messages, twice, so forth and so on. So he got home from work one day, and there were three messages on the machine. And this had been several days after his grandmother had died, and there had been multiple messages on the machine since then, you know, added and deleted and so forth. Now, there were three on this particular day. So he pushed up, pushed play, and the first message was a hang-up. The second message was a salesperson. And the third person was a message. It was a voice of a woman, and she said, I love you, J-Boy. And it was not just anyone. It was the voice of his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
He said it stopped him absolutely dead in his tracks. He turned around and pushed play again. The first message was a hang-up, as it was before. The second message was a salesperson, and there was no third message. He said that it was a message from her, though, and it was very comforting to him, and it also told him that he needed to watch his P's and Q's because his grandmother could still see what he was doing. Jay from Texas.
Don't you just love it? Grandma over there going to say, I'm going to smack you, kid, if you don't pay attention. But that's a wonderful story. That really is a wonderful story. Let's talk about the very first story in your book. It's the lamp lady that comes at night. It's the very first one in your book. Now, the person that sent this story to you, told you about this story, lives in Montana. Her name is Amy. Let's talk about the lamp.
Yes. Well, this happened when she was about 14 years old, and she's in her 30s now. And this actually happened in Pennsylvania. And she said that her aunt had been going through some things in her house and had asked her if she wanted a particular lamp that she had found. And our guest said she was really drawn to it. She said it wasn't a lamp in the traditional sense. It was a ceramic figure of a woman, a standing Spanish flamenco dancer. Her hand was in an upward position with a tambourine in it, and she had a very full skirt that was swirling as if she were dancing. Now, she said the reason she calls it a lamp is because there were all these different colored light bulbs in the skirt, and you could plug it in and it would light up. She said it was very unique. So she took it home and put it in her room. And she says it was no more than a week or so after she had the lamp, the first strange thing happened. She lived out in the country, and when the bus would come in the morning for school, it was still dark outside. He said that her mom would wake up before everyone else, and she would turn the heat up for them because she's very cold. He said this particular morning, it was dark, and she was in her bed, and she heard the shuffle of her mom's slippers. And she said that her mom's slippers had a very distinct sound, almost so much she had a habit of shuffling in such a way that people would, like, joke about it. Very distinctive. So she heard the sound of her mom's slippers coming up to where the thermostat was located right outside her doorway. So she was coming to turn up the heat, ostensibly. It turns out that those footsteps came closer and closer to her doorway, and she glanced up, and it was not her mother, but it was the physical incarnation of the woman from the lamp standing in her doorway. She said it was in the same position as on the lamp. She said it was the same position to hand everything. She said a chill went up her spine. She said that she believes this apparition tried to trick her into thinking that it was her mother because it's exactly what it sounded like with these shuffling slippers. She said it was a human figure. She didn't see through it. It was solid. She couldn't see color because it was dark in the morning there. But she said not only did it come that one time, it continued to appear every night. And every night it would progressively get closer and closer to her bed. Now, she said she can't remember the expression on its face. She just remembers this overwhelming feeling of evil and that it meant her harm. Now, when this would happen, she would be absolutely paralyzed. And every time it came around, she just couldn't speak or move. She said it went on for several weeks every night. But the weird thing was that during the day, it wouldn't happen to her to tell anyone. She wouldn't think to tell anyone. It's almost like she was blocking it out during the daytime. But yet every night as she fell asleep, she would have a sense of dread knowing it was going to bother her. Now, she had a four-poster bed, and every night this figure got closer and closer. And she was afraid what it would do when it got to the point where it was leaning over her. She said towards the end, this figure had put both of its hands on each of the bottom posts of her bed and was leaning over it. Now, for the longest time, she didn't talk about it because she was afraid. But finally, she told her parents, and they said, okay, we'll just get rid of the lamp. So they did. And nothing happened for a little while, and she moved her bed because she didn't want to look at that doorway anymore. She said a few weeks after this happened, she was lying in bed, and now her bed was against the wall next to the doorway. And as she looked over, this hand came around the doorway and grabbed the post right next to her head. And it was the hand of the figure. And she said she was totally figured out because she thought, the lamp is gone. I've told my parents, what can I do? So one day she went outside with her sister, and she was telling her about it. And they were walking around the house. It was in the winter. And all of a sudden, they see the lamp on the ground behind the house. So they'd gotten rid of it, but they didn't really get rid of it.
And so they come back to the house.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So finally, they did get rid of it. They put it in the trash can. And once they did that, it was gone forever. She said that she found out later that it was actually a woman who created this ceramic cast piece, and this woman had gotten in a lot of trouble legally for abusing children. So my caller was wondering if somehow she put some kind of energy into that lamp. She said it. She felt very targeted, as though it wanted to scare her, terrify her, and just make her life terrible. And she believes that it was an entity, and it knew exactly what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But just think about that. Every night, this weird figure gets closer and closer. What will it do? Very frightening.
It would make a great movie. Ooh, scared the pants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or at least a good Twilight Zone episode.
Yes, absolutely. But there are in just about every culture that I've become aware of an understanding that if somebody's been a rotten egg in this life big time, just because they passed over doesn't mean they got angel's wings. And they
oh, yeah, that's what I've often heard. A lot of psychics and experts that I've spoken to
mm-hmm.
have said, you know, pretty much what you are over here is what you are over there. If you're a nice guy over here, you're a nice guy over there. If you're a jerk over here, you're usually a jerk over there.
Right. And so there are many cultures that will talk about how energies will be transformed into things. And when you walk into areas, and this is, to me, it's reasonable. When you walk into areas like churches or sacred sites that the Native Americans honor, and or places that you know are very significant, there is this feeling that you have that's very positive. There is also the other side of the coin. If there has been horrific disasters or certain things, it carries a frequency. Action carries frequency with it. And so what she was getting was exactly what she surmised. This was an energy that this person transposed into this item, and that energy, because of her being so young, she was aware. It's like she clicked into that same vibratory frequency, and it actually encouraged that energy to gain strength. And that energy said, I've got someone here that I can use. And I've known this to happen to other people. I have a friend who had an experience with this in her own home. And they learned in her home that there was a vortex, especially in the master bedroom. And in this vortex area, there was an opening that would occur periodically. And there would be energies that would come in. And she actually utilized someone who was a shaman, actually a couple of them, because they recognized what it was without her really telling them, but just a little smidgen of what she'd been going through. And they said, you've got an energy field in here. It's like an open door. And at a certain time, in a certain way, for whatever reason, this opens and those on the other side will come through. Well, what I've tried to explain to my friend is that she's a natural medium, and she does not want to have anything to do with it, but she's a natural medium, so they know they can communicate with her. And she doesn't want anything to do with it. She said, I've had too many, forget it, I don't want to go there. But I said, you've got to face it sometime. You're a natural. You're far better than I am, even. So you just need to know that this is why these things are happening. And she hasn't been able to figure out how to cut it off. She did for a while, and then she's been having these wonderful, what I call the woo-woo experiences. But they're very real. They're you know, it's like the stories in your book. Now, let's go into somebody's kitchen. You have Who's Cooking in My Kitchen. And this is Jane. Now, what I like about your book is that you have stories from the guys as well as the gals. Women typically are more open in talking about these things than men are. I think many times men have, well, this isn't the right thing. You know, I guess I'm going to sound a little weird. I don't want my macho image to be affected. But that's ridiculous. And I really appreciate the fact that you share so many stories related to you by guys. And I think this is marvelous. Let's talk about this fellow that owns two restaurants and somebody was messing around in the kitchen.
Oh, yes, this is a good one. Well, this is about a gentleman who, as you said, owned two restaurants, and he got the idea, he says the crazy idea, opened the third, and he opened it, and it was a large restaurant. It was a seafood restaurant. And this whole event kind of kicked off 2 or 3 days after they were working before the place opened. So they had not opened yet, but they were about to open. They were getting everything ready. The kitchen crew was in preparation. And one of the staff, who was actually the cook, collapsed. Someone yelled for James because he was the owner, and he ran back and did CPR because the man had literally turned blue, and they called the ambulance and so forth. And long story short, this poor man didn't make it. He died. And soon after his death, they started to experience some very strange things going on at the restaurant. First, he said he had a very kind of upstanding, reliable young man who would come in and mop the floors during the day, and he would come in early just to make sure that he could get everything in the dining room before people started coming in and tracking him back up. And he did this for about 3 weeks, and this young man came to him and said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And James asked, well, what are you talking about? And he said, I can't be in here alone anymore. So James asked him, what's the problem? He said, look, every time I bring my mop bucket out to the dining room and then I go back to get something, when I come back, it's in a totally different place. He also said the chairs were put up on top of the table would all of a sudden be mysteriously set down on the floor. And he said it happened to him several times, and that was it. And he quit, and he left. And James said this was a really good, honest kid, but you could actually see the fear on his face. So his man, not only was it that young man, but his managers, when they closed late at night, they always swore that they would see a dark shape. They did their paperwork at the bar, and you're right, from the bar, they had an open kitchen. And they would swear that there was a dark shadow that they would occasionally see moving around in there. And he said he thought the strangest, scariest thing was one day when his manager called in at 8 a.m. and said, "You've got to get down here right now." And James wanted to know, "Well, what's the problem?" He said, "Just come." And he said he went down there and he said they had a huge bar and there were about 13 or 14 stools on each side of the bar. And every night they would put them up on the bar, turn them over so they could mop. So they'd rest on top of the bar. Mm-hmm. So he came in, and all of these bar stools were on the bar except for the two end bar stools and the stool exactly in the middle. Those stools had been taken down and arranged and pointed in an angle that was perfect. They made a perfect diagram at perfect angles. And he said to the manager, "Come on, you did this." And the manager said, and it was a young manager, he said, this kid had tears welling up in his eyes. He was terrified. He said, "I didn't do it." And James said, "Well, then somebody came in during the night." So they called the alarm company. Nobody had been shown to enter the building. Now, there was one other thing he said. There was a local lady who was a psychic. Now, he said he wasn't sure he believed in such things, but she was a good customer. So she came to him unsolicited and said to him, "Do you know you have an angry spirit in your kitchen?" And he said, and this woman ostensibly didn't know anything about this activity, and he said his jaw hit the floor. He said he didn't want to believe it. He was a busy man. He had other stuff to do. And she said, "The spirit is angry. He doesn't understand why other people are cooking in his kitchen." And apparently this cook felt that it was his kitchen. And this man ended up selling the restaurant. He said there was a series of things that happened there that he had never accounted before, and he'd been in business for 20 years. Very strange negative things that happened that really caused him to feel he'd had enough. He said somebody owns the space now, and you never know, they might be experiencing the same things. And he does close out saying, people kind of laughed about these experiences if they didn't experience them, but the ones that had them directly were not laughing at all. Like he said, they were terrified, and he said he's just glad he got out of there in one piece and was able to sell it and move on.
Stories like that are so fascinating. I know here in my neighborhood in the Pacific Northwest, there is a building that was made into a restaurant. Right now, it is being occupied by attorneys. The people that had the restaurant eventually decided to sell it. But employees would not go up to the attic because in the attic, they had all kinds of experiences, and it's a Victorian house.
Right.
And the stories about the spooks that were there, and we have so many, I think, delicious stories about different energies that are around. And we have spooks in our house, and it doesn't bother me at all. But it's amazing how these stories will evolve, and it's often, many times, because those that maybe have passed over, for example, the gentleman that died there in the restaurant, he's not quite understanding that though that was his kitchen, he's not there anymore. And so the heart attack happened so quickly, and nobody was there really to assist him to pass over. And so consequently, it's sort of like he's in a state of shock. But he was ticked. "You're mucking around in my place. Get out of it." So it's interesting to find out about these things, because sometimes all they need to be told, they just need to know. Somehow or another, they need to be reached, but they don't need to stay there anymore. Or if they're going to be there, butt out.
You can stay, but you have to be quiet.
I have an attitude, Jim. It's one of those things. I had to do that with someone that was in our house shortly after we had moved in. We have had Scotties for years, and Mr. Smoke was the name of our Scottish Terry at the time. And my husband was on the road traveling, and I would find him in the upstairs area of our home, sitting up on his little haunches and barking at a wall. And it was in the hallway or in the master bedroom. It'd be one of those two places. Mm-hmm. And one evening, and again, my husband was on the road traveling, I'm there, and Mr. Smoke is just causing a real stink. I mean, he was adamant. Now, he wasn't angry. He was just sort of in a little bit of a defensive posturing and just barking. And I finally said, "I don't know who you are. I can't see you. but my little dog can, and you're driving him nuts. Would you please go away now? Thank you. And all of a sudden, Mr. Smoke stopped his barking, looked at me, wagged his tail, and off he went. He was quite happy. So these stories are wonderful that you have. I just think that they're delightful. Jim Harold has been my guest. We're talking about his brand new book, True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2. And Jim, your website is jimharold.com, and that's H-A-R-O-L-D. Jim Harold Podcast, all of your information is there for them to get. It's been a delight having you as a guest today. Thank you so much for being with me.
And thank you, and I hope everybody can check out all of my free podcasts over there at jimharold.com and the book on Amazon, $2.99 on the Kindle, also available in paperback. Thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome, Jim Harold. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, Thanksgiving is going to be coming up, and oh my goodness, there is a recipe that I have here. A sweet potato pie. Now, I know that most people have tasted pumpkin. A sweet potato pie is very similar, so I've got a recipe for that that I'm going to be sharing with you. But today, since we're talking about spooky things, I wanted to share with you a unique story. And this is about a phosphorescent spider. Now, does that give you willies? Well, let's talk about a spider web. And things that were happening in the sky. Now, this occurred. We're going to step back in time to the state of Alabama, and the date is 1898, November 21st. There was this stuff that fell out of the sky down to the ground. It was luminous, and it looked sort of like a cobweb. Now, these threads, and they were described as sort of like a gossamer thread. They were exceptionally strong, and they formed in pieces that were square, and they were of a pretty good size. In 1971, in California, people noticed spaceships, that's the term they used, UFOs. They were oscillating in the sky above Monterey Bay. And they were emitting, to the best of people's perception, an exhaust. However, they floated down. The exhaust floated down. They looked like floating fibers. And 1973, Massachusetts, U.S., obviously, a woman witnessed something that looked like a UFO in the sky. And there was, again, an emission that happened, and these strands came down out of the sky, sticking to telephone wire, and trees, whatever they fell on, they were sticking to. In 1970, New Jersey, mysterious materials, same kind of stuff, were seen hanging down from the sky, not straight down, but stretched very tightly. And people that observed this said that it was between 30 and 50 degrees to ground level. Now, they never could find the end. Well, apparently, one strand ended up falling into someone's yard. And there were four boys. And this strand that had fallen to the ground, they were able to grab it. And they kept pulling on it. And they couldn't come to the end of it. You can just visualize four boys with this interesting strand of stuff that they're just pulling and pulling and pulling on. No end to it. Well, all of a sudden it snapped. They'd been doing this for well over an hour. They then took it to a university, and a professor there examined it and found that there was a hollow tube running down the center of this strand, and the tube was empty when they first analyzed it. When they went back to analyze it for another reason, they found that this tube inside of this strand was full. In 72, a strand like this was seen dangling from the sky in Georgia. It was investigated by a newspaper reporter, and there was a guy that had a house that was close enough to this. He got up on his roof, and he went and he grabbed it. Yes, he was able to grab it, and he was yanking on it. And they said when they got there, when they found out what this guy was doing, the reporter went out, he had yards and yards of this phenomenally strong fiber. And they said they noticed that it was made up of different materials. One was a fluffy kind of shiny white thread, and the other were very, very thin, hard-finished green material. And in 78, in Ohio, they found a strand of a similar material on a bramble in a backyard. They started pulling on this. And do you know they got 1,000 feet? They measured it before it broke and floated away. What is it? Where did it come from? Who made it? I don't know. But it's been going on for a long time. Makes me think of fiber optics. You know how tiny those fiber optic threads are? Well, who knows? There's a level of technology that maybe we have no knowledge of that accidentally fell to the earth. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, I want to share this sweet potato pie with you, the recipe, because it's made not with a flour crust, but with a nut crust. And if you or anyone you know is trying to avoid flour, they have a gluten-free diet, I think you would find this recipe absolutely wonderful. But I know that when you use a nut crust, it gives a whole different flavor. And so this is what I wanted to share with you. Now, this is very, very easy to make. And this is going to require 1.5 pounds of sweet potatoes. Now, if you're lazy like I get, you can use canned sweet potatoes. Just make sure you've got 1.5 pounds worth. And that'll save you a lot of time. You don't have to bake it. You don't have to microwave it. It's just ready to go. And they're already cooked. But that's what you're going to need. Now, these are the ingredients you're going to need for the crust. This is very easy. You're going to need 1/3 cup of chopped pecans, 1/3 cup of chopped hazelnuts, 1/3 cup of sliced almonds. Now, let me just add something here. If you don't like hazelnuts, my husband can't stand them. But if you like walnuts, just double up on the walnuts. You don't like almonds, make it all walnut. But you can mix your favorite nuts. Just know that you can do that. And again, the raw nuts are what you want. You're going to need 1 cup of graham cracker crumbs, 1/4 cup of packed light brown sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of the following spices, cinnamon, ground ginger, and salt. A quarter of a teaspoon each, 5 tablespoons of unsalted butter. And it's very important to use unsalted. I can't tell you the difference that it'll make in the flavor. Don't add salt to the crust. And the filling, now that's for your crust. Your filling is what you're going to need, and everything needs to be at room temperature. 3 eggs, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 1/2 cup of packed light brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of maple syrup. Use the real stuff, not the artificial maple syrup. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground ginger and cloves. You're going to need 1/2 cup of heavy cream, and you may want to have, you know, additional heavy cream so you can make some whipped cream for the topping if you so desire. Now, this is how simple this is. You're going to preheat your oven to 350 degrees, and you want to line a rimmed baking sheet with foil. Now, this is if you're going to cook your sweet potatoes. Your sweet potatoes, you need to pierce them in several places, put them on your baking sheet, bake the sweet potatoes for an hour or until they're tender. And, of course, you want to let them cool. So this is something you might want to do the night before. Do it at a time. Once you cook them, you just put them in the refrigerator until you're ready to put them to work, so to speak. Now, on a separate ungreased rimmed baking sheet, you want to take your pecans, your hazelnuts, and almonds, 1/3 cup of each, whatever you want. If you want to make it all walnuts, that's fine. Just remember, you're going to bake them in the 350-degree oven for about 7 to 8 minutes. And what you're wanting to pay attention to is that you want the nuts to smell fragrant. And that's the word that is really going to resonate in your mind, a fragrance of the nuts. It's really very significant. And they're going to be lightly toasted, and that's what you want. In a food processor, after the nuts cool, you want to pulse the nuts until they're coarsely ground. You don't want them fine. You want them coarse. Then you're going to add your cracker crumbs, your sugar, your spices, and your salt, just a touch there, and you pulse it until it's combined. And then you take the 5 tablespoons of the butter, cut it into pieces. Remember, it's unsalted butter because you've already added a little bit of salt. Unsalted butter, and you press the mixture into the bottom and up the side of a 9-inch pie pan. Okay, crust is done. Your baking sheet you put in the oven to heat while you're preparing the filling. So you want a baking sheet underneath this pie when you're making it. Your sweet potatoes, that's 1.5 pounds of sweet potatoes that are cooked, and you want to put it in your food processor. You want to puree it until it's smooth. You transfer it to a large bowl, put in your whisk skin your eggs, and in a pot, you melt the butter over your medium heat, cook it until it's getting a little brown. That's going to take 1 to 2 minutes. You want it sort of a golden brown. Stir in your sugar, your maple syrup, cinnamon, ginger, and cloves. Bring it to a boil. Cook for a minute. Whisk in your cream, then stir the mixture into your potato mixture. Pour it into your crust. Put your pie plate, filled, of course, with this delicious mixture, on a hot baking sheet. And it's very important that baking sheet be hot. 40 to 45 minutes, your pie should be done. Remember, you want to test the center. And you want to cool it completely. And, of course, you can garnish it with whatever you like. Whipped cream is the favorite of many. I prefer, you know, vanilla bean ice cream myself. That's my partiality with something that goes along with it. This is a pie you can make the day before. The flavors marry. If you make the pie the day before Thanksgiving, the flavors are going to just be absolutely awesome. For those of you that maybe don't want to have a crust, you can also take this recipe, the filling, and bake it as a custard if you want. And it is absolutely delicious. And you can put it into a loaf pan if you so desire, but if you're going to just use the filling itself without the crust, then you just put it in something like a loaf pan, but make sure you put it in a baking pan that has high sides, and then pour water and fill that lower baking pan up. Carefully put it in your 350-degree oven. Let it bake for about 1/2 hour. Test it to see if the center of the custard is done, and then you can let it bake a little bit longer, or just turn the heat off in the oven and just let the custard bake. It is just absolutely wonderful. The filling is fabulous, and sweet potato, oh, it has its own particular flavor. It is absolutely delicious, and it's a Southern favorite. Always has been. So there is a yummy pie that will just be amazingly wonderful. And for Thanksgiving or for any holiday, it is just absolutely fabulous to fix. Actually, you don't need to have a holiday even. You just fix it. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to give me a buzz, is 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow my guest is going to be Damien Burkell. And Damien has just a wonderful book. It's called The Job Search Checklist. And so many people today are trying to find, how in the world can you go out and get a job? There are so many people looking for work. The working environment has shifted. There are so many jobs that are no longer available that at one time, well, there was a big need for all of it. This is a constant, and especially when you think of how technology has evolved so much change through the years, how do you work in today's world? How do you go about looking for a job? Well, we're going to find out about that when we chat with Damien tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that. What would you do if you found a wallet with $4,000 cash in it, and there wasn't any identity in that wallet? What would you do? Would you say, it's mine? Finders keepers, losers weepers. Remember that saying? Well, there's a gentleman by the name of Paul Williams, and when I came across his story, I thought, boy, we need to tell his story, because it gives an awareness of the reality that honesty is so important, and it can make a tremendous difference in life. What we do, what we say, how we act, we need to walk our talk, not say it out of both sides of our mouth, as we are seeing so many people doing today. Paul Williams, he is a tire installer at a Walmart store in Antelope, California. And he had finished work, and just like any of us would do, he's, you know, rushing to get to his car, or actually he had to catch a bus. He didn't even have a car. He had to catch a bus. And all of a sudden something catches his eye, and he just looks. And he said, am I seeing what I'm seeing? Well, he saw what he saw. It was somebody's wallet. Well, he went and picked it up. His bus was on its way, And he didn't want to miss it, because it was going to be a long time before the next one came. So he picked up the wallet, ran back into the store, but he couldn't find a manager, and he couldn't find a security guard to give it to. And he said, oh, I got to go get my bus. So what did he do? He puts his wallet in his pocket. He'd bring it back to work the next day. So he caught his bus, just barely, and as he is on the bus, he opens up the wallet to look for a driver's license, ID, right? None. But this is what he found. A thick stack of $100 bills. Well, while he's on the bus, he's very discreetly counting it, and it blew him away. It was $4,000 in cash. He said, who in the world is going to be carrying that much cash around? It just was something that he kept thinking about, and he thought to himself, you know, this is important to somebody. Now, this is what was going on while the wallet was with Paul. There's a woman by the name of Lynn Andrews. She's a mother of three children. She's divorced. That was her wallet. She was going to pay off her mortgage on her house. That was her final payment, $4,000 cash. She was going to do it that very day. And she said, the reason I wanted to pay off, and by the way, this was a second mortgage, and she had taken out a loan about 10 years before because she had had to do major repairs on her house. And she said, I really had worked so hard and had saved so hard because my dream was I wanted to be able to pay off that second mortgage in one lump sum. And she had managed to save enough money, and she was very proud of herself. Well, here she has all this cash. When she wanted to pay it off that day, the bank she was to pay it off to was closed when she got to it. And she said, oh boy. So she decided she was going to go do some errands. And it was when she started to do her errands, she realized her wallet was gone. Well, she panicked. Can you imagine what you'd do if $4,000 cash that you've been carrying around was gone? I could just imagine her panic. She searched everything, 3, 4, 5, 10 times. She retraced her steps, asked questions. No one had seen the black leather wallet, and she just broke down. She cried. She said, nobody's going to ever turn that in. It's all cash. Well, Paul was on this bus, and he's thinking, $4,000. What could I do with $4,000? And he thought, oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could do the other. But Paul was a man of integrity. And he was daydreaming about that kind of money, but he wasn't going to keep it. He said, I just couldn't do that because somebody, somewhere, that money meant a lot to them. So he told his wife what happened, and she said to him, she said, you've got to find out who this belongs to because it's not ours. It's obviously somebody's money, and it was very important to them. So he called Walmart. And what is interesting is the timing with this. He called Walmart at the same time that Lynn was telling a security guard about her lost wallet. And the security guard was called over, and someone had heard the conversation. He took it. He said, you're going to need to talk to someone. And Paul told her, I have your wallet. She said, oh, thank God. Thank you for being so honest. They got together, and he said, don't worry about anything. I didn't take anything out of your wallet, every single dollar there. And she told him what it was that it was for. She said, I did not even know that there were still honest people in the world. And he said, well, I'm just happy that I know who it belongs to because there was no identification in the wallet. He said, I really had a very special day knowing that I had found this woman's money and that she was going to be able to fulfill her dream of paying off her second mortgage. He said, knowing that I could truly help someone is the best reward in the world. And John Maxwell once said, life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. How would you have reacted if you had found $4,000 cash that belonged to someone and not you? Good question to ask yourself. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Remember, no matter where you go with you, not with someone else. So Paul is a good example of how honesty and integrity can make a big difference, not just in your own life, but in the lives of the people around you. God bless. Have an absolutely marvelous day wherever you are and whatever you're doing. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.